Let's start with what's happening in the country right now as the march toward eventual impeachment continues. And certainly some historical perspective on this involves a look at the state of Maine. And let's go back to the Nixon impeachment. Can you talk a little bit about the role that Bangor's Bill Cohen played in that?
Sure. Yeah, it's instructive to remember that Bill Cohen at the time, he was a freshman congressman from Maine's 2nd District. And he had requested, he wanted to be on the Judiciary Committee because he was an attorney and had an interest in it. And I figured it would be a quiet place to be. You know, he's not flashy like appropriations and some of the big ones. And wouldn't you know, he finds himself as a freshman thrust into one of these momentous historic things where they were debating articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon from conduct that stemmed from the Watergate matter. So here he is, and as a Republican, representing, again, that's, you know, Northern Maine, a pretty Republican spot back then, and considering what to do about a Republican president. And ultimately, he did vote for articles of impeachment against President Nixon, and he did so thinking probably his political career was going to be over because he thought his constituents, Republicans who elected him, would say, no, we don't want you doing this, and the heck with you. Now, remember, he took this vote before you had the so-called smoking gun tape that came out,
right,
which clearly implicated President Nixon, and then Nixon resigned. But so the mood changed. But Bill Cohen's thought was, and he says it to this day, was, you just have to look at all the facts. I read all the material, and then I made a decision, and I went home, and I explained myself to the constituents, the people that put me in office, and hoped they would understand and feel that I did the right thing.
Now, when that process began, there were still an awful lot of people on both sides of the aisle, and the American public wasn't really convinced that impeachment was the way to go. They never got to actually voting on articles of impeachment. What was it that turned the tide that we don't seem to be able to get people to do today?
Well, I think there was a let's call it a seriousness about the work among more office holders, particularly in the Senate. Remember, Richard Nixon had been elected by a landslide in 1972, reelected. So, you know, there were a lot of Americans who were happy with the job he was doing. And there were plenty who never bought into the idea that he did anything that warranted his removal from office. But once the evidence began mounting, you had some Republican senators finally go to the White House and say, Mr. President, this can't continue. You're going to be removed from office. You should resign. And Richard Nixon, because he had the best interests of the country at heart, recognized an impeachment trial would be a bad thing. And so he stepped down. No one ever dreams they're going to have to make that decision, but he did. And in its own way, it was an honorable thing to do.
You mentioned Bill Cohen believing that it might end up costing him his political career. And I think you could make the case that the opposite of that was true in the long run. It's one of the things he's remembered for and really set a pattern for him of continually doing what he felt was best for the country and not always going along party lines. Is that time past for us? Are there no more Bill Cohens out there in Congress?
Well, we'll see. You know, finding profiles and courage is never easy. The joke is always no one wants to end up in the next edition of JFK Profiles and Courage book because you had to sacrifice something. I will tell you, Bill Cohen has told me over the years that one of the reasons he did not ever make a run for president, which he certainly could have done legitimately, was that he felt there were still plenty of Republicans who wouldn't support him because of that, which I thought was interesting. After all those years and everyone kind of came around to the idea that, you know, Nixon was behaving inappropriately and had to go. But the question, one of the things I ask myself about this current situation is this obstruction of Congress. Now, proving abuse of power is probably a difficult thing to do. But if you want to go and stand up for the idea that we have separate but equal branches of government and that Congress has the authority to insist that people come and testify with subpoenas, and the White House says, no, we don't recognize that authority, they're not going to go. That's, you know, that's a question a lot of members of Congress and a lot of senators have to ask themselves. Do they want to stand up for the principle of separation of powers, or do they feel this doesn't warrant that sort of taking that sort of stand?
We're talking with Pat Callahan of New Center Maine here on Downtown. Let's move a little bit closer to home. We're now less than a year away from the 2020 election. And let's start with a Senate race that, well, I think a couple of years ago looked like a lock for Susan Collins. Things have changed a lot in 24 months.
They have. One of the biggest things that happened with her was the vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Republicans have really rallied around her since then. If you recall, looking back, there was always rumblings that Susan Collins wasn't conservative enough for Maine, and that they would hope that some other Republican might challenge her. Once she stood up and made her decision on Brett Kavanaugh, they've pretty much rallied around her as well. Now she faces another, a big moment for her, politically speaking, as well as in doing the job. And it's a job she takes very seriously. Let's be clear about that. When she voted not to convict Bill Clinton, there were plenty of Republicans very unhappy with her about that decision. But she stuck to it, and it ultimately did not hurt her politically. The question is now, let's say she looks at these articles of impeachment when they get to the Senate and feels that he should be removed from office, that President Trump should be removed, and votes that way. Well, Republicans, many will not look kindly on that. Will it be enough to affect her reelection? Or would she finally just say, you know what, I don't care. I have to do what's right. And I think that's how she approaches things. And, it's a tough one. And if she votes to acquit him, well, she's already got Democrats and a lot of independents angry with her over Kavanaugh. So it probably doesn't change much of the calculus politically. The other side of the coin is Jared Golden, the freshman congressman in the 2nd District, who's a Democrat. Republicans are trying to make a lot of hay out of the fact that he should be standing up to the Democrats in the House and not supporting this process. Well, he's tried to make it clear he supports the process without judging yet how he is going to vote. And I certainly think that's a fair way to put this.
Now, Senator Collins has not officially announced that she's running for re-election yet. Do you think there's any possibility that she may decide she's had enough sometime between now and the first of the year?
It's possible. I think it's highly unlikely. Clearly she's geared up for battle, so to speak, and she's been running ads. Her campaign is very active. They've raised a ton of money, and it's full steam ahead. But keep in mind, when Olympia Snow decided to retire from the Senate, it was kept a big secret, even to people who were signing up to work on her campaign, people who were taking jobs as the treasurer or somebody like that. Then they find out the next day that she's not running after all. So it's possible. If I were in her position and having served 24 years, I might say, I've done my part. I'm going to enjoy life. Go back to Maine the way life should be. But she's a hard worker and likes this kind of work. I can only imagine it's not as much fun as maybe it used to be. But I would be shocked if she said she's not running, but I would never say until she stands up herself and says she's in, I would never say it's impossible that she doesn't run.
Do you have a feel, Pat, for who is most likely to be her opponent?
Well, the money is all going to Sarah Gideon. I think the Democrats should be cautious about trying to anoint somebody in the way they're doing, that voters like to make that choice themselves. And in any case, if it turns out you need a strong primary, and whoever emerges will be a better candidate. If it's Sarah Gideon, then I think that serves her well. One of the things we all need to keep in mind, those of us who are in the news business or just follow politics closely, we know who Sarah Gideon is. There's a lot of people who don't, really. They don't follow the nuances of that. John Richardson, who's former Speaker of the House and is one of our commentators on Political Brew each week, jokes about the fact that when you're the Speaker of the House, you think everybody knows you, but not everybody does.
What about for Jared Golden? A number of people have announced. Who would you consider at this point the front runner for the Republican nomination?
I don't know that there is one. I certainly haven't seen any polling numbers that have any particular weight. I do think it is interesting where you have the three candidates who got in earliest, Adrian Bennett and Eric Brakey and Dale Crafts, all of them tying themselves very closely to President Trump. And now you've got another candidate in who is not well known by any means. He's the Penobscot County Treasurer, John Hyatt. When I first saw John Hyatt was running for office, by the way, I was thinking, oh, he'll have a great campaign song. But no, it's the treasurer of Penobscot County. And he is what they describe him as a Trump skeptic in saying that there's a lot of things the president does I don't approve of. So does that open up a path for him among Republicans who are dissatisfied with President Trump? And I'm sure there probably are some. So that's an interesting question. If he can get any money and campaign organization going, that becomes a really interesting primary.
How much influence does former Governor Paul LePage still have in Republican politics?
Well, I think he's in Maine Republican politics, I think he has a lot of influence. And he was it was pretty clear he didn't want anyone challenging Susan Collins. And so that candidate pulled out and claimed it was because LePage said you shouldn't be running. I don't know that it ever happened directly. But, what Paul LePage says carries a lot of weight with Republicans in Maine, without a doubt.
All right, completely away from politics or anything like that, Pat, did you get a chance to listen to the remastered Beatles' Abbey Road?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I just think it's terrific. It's one of those albums. It was so well recorded. It didn't necessarily need a remastering, but for those who like there's a surround sound, 5.1 surround, that's really cool to listen to. And there's a lot of good outtakes on it where you hear the group working in the studio. To me, this is the big revelation of it. And it's that our assumption has been they knew this was going to be the last record and they wanted to go out with a bang and make it as good as they could. And they figured that would be the end. There's no indication during the session chatter that you hear that A, they're not getting along with each other, or B, they're thinking, well, this is it, we're going to be done. Because in fact, it turns out not long after that record was finished, John Lennon, there's a recording of him having a meeting with a couple of the other Beatles and saying, well, gee, should we make a new single? Should we, what's the plan for a new album? So it was never written in stone that this was going to be the end. But let's face it, if you're only as good as your last record, then we know how darn good they are.
Pat, we're asking guests if they have a favorite Christmas song, and we're going to feature some of them on Christmas Day. Is there one that always takes you back to your youth, which was not that long ago, of course?
Yeah, thank you for that. When it comes to rock and pop stuff, for an instrumental, I've always liked The Ventures' Sleigh Ride, because I love the way it starts out sounding just like Walk, Don't Run, and then shifts into the Christmas song. And then for vocals, for a rock or pop record, it's Little Saint Nick by the Beach Boys.
Can't go wrong with either one of those. Hey, Pat, we appreciate it. Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time for us here this afternoon.
All right. Merry Christmas to you and yours.